My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found it necessary to take a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 25th, 1981, and I'm grateful to God and many men and women who came into my life who showed me the way and were mentors to me, and I have many mentors now. I get to hang out with some wonderful, wonderful men. Very important for somebody like me. Last night, some of you people know who Pastor Kerry Miller is. And, you know, what happens is when you meet, I remember hearing, not necessarily an AA meeting, but in some spiritual gathering, that the man or woman you'll be in the next 5 years, what you'll turn into will depend upon the people you hang out with and the books you read. Without any question, the books you read sort of depend upon who you hang out with. I guess even if you read books, it depends upon whether you hang out with certain people. I know without any question that the conversations you have will depend upon who you're hanging out with. What you converse about, what you focus your life on, will have to do with who you're talking to. And I know what you're talking about will have to do with what you're thinking about. And I know what you're thinking about will determine whether or not you're living a life of death or a life of life. And that's what I really want to talk to you about tonight. I'm going to talk to you about the 11th step. Talk to you about, you know, basically my experience with this deal. You know, my sponsor used to say, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will walk away with an experience. You know, as alcoholics, we're all brilliant and know-it-alls, but we all have opinions, right? I know I've had opinions all my life, but there's nothing like actually doing the deal. And my first sponsor used to say, you know, Russ, you can walk the walk, but can you talk the talk, but can you walk the walk? You know, can you actually do the deal? And I want to share, in coming at the 11th step, I want to share it a different way than maybe you're used to hearing it, because I want to, I'm going to read a couple of things from the big book, and what I really want to sort of focus on is an 11th step life versus worldly clamors, versus a life of death. You know, it is possible to be physically sober in AA and live a life of quiet desperation. The novelist says most people live lives of quiet desperation. And one of the things that happens when you read the big book is, whether you know it or not, you're being exposed to a life that you're being exposed to glimpses of a life that, as an alcoholic, you have never experienced ever, even as a child. There's like lines in the big book. Well, you know, when we first come in, if you're like me, what you really get hooked on is the fact that this is a book written to people as crazy as you are. I sponsored a guy named Tom, and we were drinking buddies, actually, and he got to a point, he was an attorney like myself, and he got to the point where he ended up homeless, living in somebody's living room, sleeping on the floor with one pair of pants and a t-shirt and his hair down to here, and completely out of it. Alcohol, drugs, and the whole bit. And one day he called me up, getting ready to commit suicide. You know, had a shotgun, he was going to kill himself, crying on the phone. And I left work, and I came down and got him. I took him to an AA meeting, then I took him to another AA meeting. And he was one of these guys that you have, so you find every once in a while that took to AA like a duck takes the water. I mean, he was like blown away. Within a day, he had cut his hair. He looked like he was, you know, GQ. We got him a couple of some clothes. You know, he actually worked in a lead factory for a year before he even started practicing law, and he went to meetings night and day. And he's one of these guys where his whole aspect and his whole attitude changed like that. It says, Dr. Young said to Roland Hazard, he said, here and there, once in a while, he says, we do see people change like you. He says, you're an alcoholic. I've never been able to help a person like you. I've never been able to help an alcoholic. He says, is there no hope? He says, yes, here and there, once in a while, these things happen to these people. We call them phenomena. And a religion, phenomena, I guess it means things we can't explain. Religiously, if you were of a faith, or belong, we would call these things miracles. Something happens that you just can't explain as to why it happened. He says, ideas, emotions, and attitudes that were the driving forces of these men's lives are suddenly cast over to one side, and they become dominated, and I want that to be a very important word, dominated by a whole different set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. He says, I've been trying to do this in you. I've never been successful with an alcoholic of your type. And with Tommy, it happened. You know, something happened like that. It sort of happened that way for me. I'm not saying it happens to everybody. Sometimes in alcoholics parlance, what I've seen is suddenly can be like 25 years. See, sometimes you got to stretch a little. Suddenly can be a long time, but it still happens. So he changed rather quickly, both physically, even mentally to a certain extent. And you know, one of the things they say is our alcoholic life. He says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. And in describing alcoholics, it says in describing us, now listen to this, in describing us sober, physically sober, it says that we are restless. What does it say? Restless, irritable, and discontented, which I'm going to assume is not like a good thing. Now, I'm going to include, now, even though they use the words restless, irritable, and discontented, I know if I passed around a piece of paper and a pen to everybody in here, and I said, now write down three other words that sort of describe how you felt, you might say filled with self-pity. You might say, somebody else will say very depressed. Alcoholics never get depressed, they're always very depressed. You know, you're depressed, I'm very depressed, you know. And if I pass this around, we would have, in other words, we wouldn't have restless, irritable, discontented. We'd have restless, irritable, discontented, and 1,000 other words which are like that that describes an alcoholic life and what it's like sober with dips and dabs of utter excitement and amazement. You know what I mean? Followed by a lot of drugs and alcohol, you know? And you know what it says about that? It says our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. That's what it feels like to be an alcoholic not drinking. Not good. Not good. And yet what happens is when we come in here for the same reason Tommy came in here. We don't come in here because of that. We come in here because we can't stop drinking and drugging. At least we think that's why we come in here. I mean, if I was to say, let's have a show of hands of how many people came in here because they had a problem with alcohol or drugs. How many people came in here because they had a problem with alcohol or drugs? How many people, when they came in here, stopped using the alcohol and drugs? So, what are you doing here? Okay, well, I'm going to tell you why you're here. You probably know why you're here, but let me explain why I think you're here and why I know I'm here. Because sometime after you came in here, like Tommy, like a bolt out of the blue, whether you had 1 week, 1 month, or 1 year, it occurred to you that you had a big problem and it wasn't necessarily alcohol or drugs. That there were some other problems that you had. And you read something in the book where it says alcohol consumption or drug consumption was but a symptom of the problem. Our real problem centered in our mind, not our body. Now, we find this out different. Sometimes we find this out at 3 o'clock in the morning. 3 o'clock in the morning is a great time to find out that you're crazy. Because every second seems like a minute, and you can't get back to sleep, and you can't stop thinking, and your brain is so loud, you know what I mean? But there are other things that can, you know, yelling and screaming and being thumb-sucking crybabies and being so affected by life and things like that. All the stuff that we go through. Now, for Tommy, Tommy was just having a grand old time. He was loving AA. He's still sober today. He's doing step meetings. He's got like 30 years now and doing great. And when he was about 2 months sober, he was driving on the west coast of Florida, and I got a long-distance phone call, you know, and he started, apparently, while driving along, he started thinking. And I don't know, sometimes that happens. You're just coasting along, everything's okay. You're just riding high on AA and the fellowship of AA, and all of a sudden, out of the blue, you start thinking about yourself, your life, and what it all means. And anybody who's been around Alcoholics Anonymous knows, for a long time, knows that thinking is not really a good thing for alcoholics. And after thinking for a few minutes, he realized that he was crazy. He realized that he was really crazy. And it scared him because he hadn't been drinking for 2 months. And AA was the only thing that worked for him. And he realized that he didn't really have a drinking problem. What he had was he was crazy. And so he called me up on the phone and he said, "Russell," he says, "I got a problem." Because I was his sponsor at that time. I said, "Well, what is it, Tommy?" He says, "I don't know whether I'm an alcoholic. I haven't had a drink in 2 months." He says, I think I might just be crazy. And I said, "Tommy," and he was very worried because he thought he might have to leave AA. Because AA is for, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous. It's like in the name, you know. It's like for a drinking problem. And he says, I might just be crazy. I might not be an alcoholic. And I said, "Tommy, you can be both." He said, this is coming from like whatever, like a 40-year-old lawyer. He said, "Really?" I said, "Absolutely." He said, "Oh, thank God, you know? I thought I'd have to leave Alcoholics Anonymous." So I take it, since you guys are here and you're not drinking anymore, that it's occurred to you that you may suffer from a disease where though the drinking is a symptom of the problem, there's some problems with this disease that goes on even after you stop drinking. You know, every once in a while you guys may have something called anxiety or worry or fear or all sorts of things mixed up like in that kind of milkshake, which sort of like takes the spin off your fastball. Life isn't so good. Always a crisis brewing. Something happened. Something to worry about. Something going on. You know, going to meetings, not necessarily even because you want to go to meetings, or maybe you want to go to meetings, but going to meetings because you got to go to meetings. Almost like going to meetings, almost like when you had to have a drink. "I need a meeting. I need a meeting because I think I'm just going to blow my flipping brains out unless I go to a meeting." So you may recognize there may be something going on. And somewhere along the line, I think if you're an alcoholic, whether it be 9 months or 1 year, you start saying things to yourself like, "Now I know why I drank." You start actually seeing why you drank. "Now I know why I drank. I can't handle life." It's like, you know, I heard a guy say, you know, it's true. It says, whatever insulation a human being is given by God in order to handle the traffic and the horseshit that goes on in this world out there, somehow, when I was going down the conveyor belt and God was spraying that insulation on, right when it came to me, somebody said, "Oh God," and he looked up and I went right by. And that's it. I didn't get the spritz, you know? And sure, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. And so what we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk about, in sort of general terms, in order to get at the 11th step, and my view of it, I want to talk about life after the booze. I'm not going to talk about the booze. I haven't been talking about the booze in a long time because that's not your problem. Your problem is, what are you going to do now? Because now you got a real problem. Because if you're an alcoholic and you're sober, you got a real flipping problem. Because you got to figure out how to negotiate from the time you wake up in the morning at 7 o'clock and the time you have to go to sleep at 11 o'clock You got to negotiate through relationships, or maybe lack of relationships, or people, or money problems, or this entire planet. You got to negotiate through billboards and TV and the world, which, by the way, is not designed to keep you sober. It's designed to make you nervous. You've got to somehow negotiate that way and somehow not blow your brains out, kill yourself, drink, and perhaps, if it's possible, to grab some sort of happiness, whatever that is, out of this world without winding up in jail. You got to figure out how to do that. And here's the problem. You don't have a clue. You don't have a clue. The closest you come to that deal, maybe, and when I say you, I understand there are people here that have that clue, but the closest you come is that somehow, some way, if you talk to your sponsor, you go to meetings, sometimes you feel better. I mean, that's the closest you figure this thing out is, when I go to meetings, I feel good. When I don't go to meetings, I don't feel so good. When I speak to my sponsor, I feel good. When I don't speak to my sponsor. But other than that, that's pretty much you're adrift in the world, convinced that really nobody's going to understand you or that kind of stuff. So I want to talk about the two things that's going on here, because there are really a couple of things going on here. After you get sober and you're an alcoholic, and this is the way I look at it, and this is, you know, this is I'm expressing it in my own, you know, one of the things it says in the big book on page 25 is it says, in talking about an AA talk, I'm sorry, page 29, it says, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recover. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. That's what an AA talks about. It's about how I established my relationship with God, because it's only through God's assistance in this book, according to what we believe in Alcoholics Anonymous, it says he's the one who has all power. Says there is one who has all power. That one's God. May you find. You know what he has the power to do? He has the power to completely change your life. He has the power to rocket you in the fourth dimension of existence and rocket you into heaven. He has the power to have you lose fear of people and of economic insecurity. And you're all scared of people. I know you are, because when you were with them, you had a drink. And if you really liked people and you weren't scared of their judgment, you wouldn't have to get drunk all the time. And I know that's a problem, because I know every alcoholic, after he gets out of treatment or whatever it is, whenever he has invited to a social event, the most scariest thing in the world is, what am I going to do with this wedding? What am I going to do with this thing? Because there's going to be people around, and they're going to ask me to drink. So God has the power to remove fear of people. It has the power to remove fear of financial difficulties. It has the power that no matter how far down you've gone down in the scale, as you're telling yourself in the shower lathering up that you're a piece of crap and you don't deserve to live, it has the power of lifting that up and changing that whole deal. You know, it has power of doing for you what you cannot do for yourself. I know, because it says in the big book, he will do for you what he is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. It says in the big book all sorts of things. It says, see to it your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. I mean, this isn't my stuff. This is our program. This is what this thing is supposed to do for you, which is more and different than just not drinking. It says if we're sincere about this decision to make him the centerpiece of our life, he says all sorts of remarkable things will happen. He will give us, being all powerful, he'll give us everything we need if we stay close to him and perform his work well. He says we will lose fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter will be reborn. It says perhaps there is a better way. We think so. The way of trusting and relying upon God. We never apologize for God. This is all big book stuff. This is all what this program is about. This is all what it's introducing you to. And then finally, after doing all these steps, in a painstaking way, which means in the sixth step, you finally give it utterly all. You become one of the men instead of the boys, because you want to belong to the fellowship of the Spirit, not the fellowship of the thumb-sucking crybabies. There's a fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. The only requirement to be an Alcoholics Anonymous is a desire to stop drinking. You see, you can be an Alcoholics Anonymous and write hateful things, you know, anti-Semitic things, anti-Catholic things. You can shit all over people and be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and be the worst human being in the world, and you can still go to meetings. You can go to closed meetings, because the only requirement to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous is a desire to stop drinking. You can be a pedophile. You can be a child rapist. You can be any type of individual you want. As long as you have a desire to stop drinking, you're welcome here. It's like a real big funnel. You know what I mean? And then once you get here, you can be a thumb-sucking crybaby. You can go to meetings and complain all the time. You can be constantly and exclusively focused on yourself, worried about yourself, thinking about yourself, you know, ripping out the hearts of other people. You can be selfish. You can be self-centered. That's what it says we are. That's the base. It says we're selfish, we're self-centered. That's the true base of it. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. We step on the toes of others. They retaliate. We're self-will run riot. You can be that sober. Though he usually doesn't think so, you can be that deal. He says, above all, we got to get rid of this, or you can get rid of that selfishness. It says we got to do that, or else it's going to kill us. You can have the world and its people dominate you. That's what it says. It says we learn once you learn that the world and its people have the power to kill, to dominate us. Listen, this is a group of alcoholics I'm talking to. You know exactly what I'm talking about. You know what it's like to wake up in the morning with people on your mind. You know what it's like to go to bed at night with the same people on your mind. You know what it's like to go through the day with the same circumstances and the people on my mind. What am I going to do about that check? What am I going to do about that money? What am I going to do about that car? What am I going to do about my mother? What am I going to do about my father? What am I going to do about my husband, my wife, that boy, that girl, that thing? You know what it's like to have a life filled with terror, and where you can't stop thinking about yourself and what's going to happen to you over a period of days, weeks, and months, sober, and constantly talking to other people about it, maybe, and still not getting enough from them so that you can stop thinking about it. You know what it's like to live a life of sober worry. There's nobody in here that doesn't go through the day or hasn't gone through the day or hasn't experienced sober worry about the same thing, thinking about the same thing. Over and over and over again with no solution in sight, but you can't stop thinking about it because you're addicted to thinking. There are people in here right now. There are some people just waking up to what I'm saying. You know why? There are people in here right now, I'm telling you right now, that have been thinking about the thing that's on their mind that they've been worried about, and they haven't even been paying attention to the meeting, and they just started paying attention. They say, holy shit, I think he's talking about me. That's what I'm going through. There are people in here that have missed this entire meeting because they've been worried about how they're going to pay their rent, you know what I mean, where they're going to get the money, what's going to happen with their job, what their boss is, they're thinking about what their boss is thinking, people are living rent-free in their minds, and they're just coming to now. And there are other people in here that walk out of the meeting and they're going to say, what did you think about it? And they don't even know what I said. Because they've been thinking about it all the way through the meeting. Because that's alcoholism. And you know what that's called? A crummy life. A life of death. And you can have that. That's available to you in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, you can have a life of death. You know, describe what a life of death. You know, when we come in here, what we get really excited about, because we all come in here with the same thinking, nobody understands me. Nobody can possibly understand me. And so the first thing that hooks in an alcoholic is when they read more about alcoholism, or there's a solution. They talk about the guy who can't stop drinking. They talk about the feelings and the emotions. You know, what's that whole line to stop drinking? You know, we go on vacation, we don't go on vacation. You know, the jaywalk and everything. You say, man, finally, somebody that understands me. And you know what they're talking about? All the bad stuff. They talk about all the bad stuff. They talk about the resentments and everything. They say, that's me. And then you go to meetings and people talk about all the bad stuff. You know, then I wanted to kill the guy, and I wanted to do this, and she said that, and I says, yeah, I know how he feels. That happened to me, too. You identify what? With all the bad stuff. Because that's you, feeling bad, acting bad, feeling crappy. So you go to a meeting, people stand up, or they talk, and they share, and they talk about how crappy they feel, how they want to kill themselves, how they want to drink, and you say, yeah, that's me. Finally, I found a fellowship of people who feel crappy about themselves in the world. And every once in a while, you run into somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's a little bit of a different deal once in a while. And they start talking about the rocket ship ride. And they start, and you say, and you look at these guys, and you're like amazed. You know, so you'll be amazed before you're halfway done. And here's why you're amazed. You've heard the person speak before, or somehow you know, and you know he or she is an alcoholic. You know they're genuine. You know they're telling the truth. but you can't believe anything. It's not that you don't believe them. You know what I mean? It's just that you don't say, how do you do that? How do you do that? I don't know about you. I went to a meeting when I was 2 months sober. And I talk about this from time to time. A guy named Al Kennedy chaired the meeting. He had 35 years. And he chaired a step meeting like this. And he was talking. And he was helping people and everything like that. And it was just wonderful, wonderful. I could have listened to him all day. And then he left the meeting. And many of you have heard this story before. And I turned to my sponsor. I said, boy, I really like that guy. He was great. He's like one of these people that, you know, when he was talking, he sort of calmed you down. Like a Valium, he sort of calmed you down. Like you could come in with all sorts of stuff on your mind, and you're listening to this guy, you just calm down. Because he was so calm, and he was wearing life so loose, so like a loose garment. You could tell he was not a person in fear. He had a sense of himself. He wasn't full of himself. He wasn't cocky, and he wasn't feeling down. You know, he wasn't tearing down. He was a real person, a mensch, and you felt good about it. And he walked out the door, and I said, boy, that guy was great. You know, like maybe we can catch him again, or when's he speaking again? And my sponsor turned to me. Now I want you to imagine this. I'm 3 months sober. I'm a thumb-sucking crybaby. Every other second, it's like, what am I going to do about this? What am I going to do about that? 3 o'clock in the morning, it's saying, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do about that. I'm a resentment waiting to happen. You know what I mean? In AA, out of AA, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter, you know? And I'm sitting there listening to this guy, and I turn to my sponsor. And with ideations of suicidal thoughts every once in a while. Like I'm going to be in a car and a bullet's going to go through my head. Or how about this? You know, what am I going to do if I walk out of the car room and two guys jump me and force me to drink a beer? You know what I mean? Do I have to pick up a white chip? Because when you're an alcoholic and you're crazy, you think shit like that, you know? You think people are out to not rob you, but to force you to drink, you know what I mean? At gunpoint. I refuse to believe I'm the only one here who's ever thought about that. Because I'm an alcoholic and I know I got my twins in here. If I thought about it, you thought about it too, you know? So I'm sitting here and I'm listening to this Al Kennedy guy. And he walks out of the room, and I turned to my sponsor, and I turned and I said, this guy, you know, I really like him. He's great. And he turns to me and he says this. Now, imagine he says, you know, he's dying. And I said, like, I didn't even hear it. It's like I didn't even hear it. I said, no, I mean, I'm talking about the guy who just did the meeting. He says, yeah, he's dying. I said, what do you mean, he's dying? He says, the guy who just did the meeting. He didn't say, you know, the alcoholics I hung out with, you know, dying if they had a paper cut. That was good for 3 hour meetings. You know? That was 10 minutes of on and on. I got the paper cut, and then to make matters worse, I put some lemon juice in it. Why is this always happening to me? You know what I mean? And it wasn't even my paper, and I was just trying to do a good deed, you know. And I haven't had a drink in 6 months, and you know, so he says he's dying. I said, wait a minute, he's dying. He says, Russ, he's dying of cancer. He's got 3 months to live. I said, but he didn't say anything. He says, I know. He didn't talk about it. And so you meet these guys, and 3 months later, three or 4 months later, he was dying. He was dead. So you run into people, every once in AA, that are alcoholics. But they ain't in the fellowship of the thumb-sucking crybabies. They're not the guys you're sitting with out in the parking lot smoking cigarettes. Look at that guy. Look at this guy talking the bullshit, you know. They're not the guys or the gals that you're even talking about in A's. They're not the guys and the gals that you're hanging out at discussion meetings. You know what I mean? They're guys that like zoom in from somewhere. I don't know where they come in from, because there's only 1 in 10,000 that you meet them, you see them. There's something special going on, and you want what they have, but you can't even figure out what they have. And you know you want it. You can't even figure out what they have, and you can't figure out for the life of you how to get it. And you can't even believe what you're watching, because it's like amazing. How can somebody be dying and do a meeting like that? I mean, how is that possible? If my boss looks at me funny, I'm in a meeting thinking about that all through the meeting. I can't stop thinking about it. Is he going to fire me? What am I going to do? You know, what am I going to do if I don't have a job? Nobody will hire me. I mean, that's good for like 6 weeks. What do you do when you're dying of cancer and you're up here and you're talking about the sixth? I mean, how do you do that? All I know is I wanted it. I just didn't know how to get it, because I lived a life of fear all my life, and I know you do too, because the big book says that our lives are filled with corrosive fear. And if you say, no, that's not true for me, that just tells me you're in denial. Because I believe this book over you, and it says with self-will run right, though usually you don't think so. So how do you do that deal? You know, how do you get to that point? So here in this book it says, so apparently what happens in this, as you look at this book and as you look at the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, you get this sense that once you come in here and once you start working this thing, that there are really sort of like two fellowships. There's this fellowship of people that are just trying to not drink. You know, just trying to make it one day at a time. Trying to get better. You know, trying to do this thing. And then there's another deal going on. We'll call it the fellowship of the spirit. They talk about it on the very last page. It says, when the guy says, how will we meet some of you guys? He says, we don't know that. He says, God will reveal that. He says, he will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. We talked about craving last week, the 10 step, craving. We crave money. We crave sex. We crave booze. We crave drugs. We crave. Alcoholics know what craving says. We crave fellowship. We crave fellowship so bad, we make bad decisions and have horrible fellowship just because we crave not being alone. That's part and parcel of being an alcoholic. It says, you'll see us, you'll surely find some of us in the fellowship of the Spirit, which, quite frankly, is a terminology that's over 2,000 years old. It's one of Paul's epistles called the Fellowship of the Holy Spirit. And trust me, it's different than just the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's apparently different qualifications for that fellowship. It's a different type of deal. And you learn a little bit about those qualifications slowly but surely as you get into the steps and find yourself in the sixth step where it talks about some sort of separation. It says this is the step that separates the men from the boys, so a well-loved clergyman says. The men are those who repeatedly over a lifetime try repeatedly to beat down and get rid of all their faults so they can be closer to him and grow in the image and likeness of their creator. I don't care whether you think it sounds religious. I don't care whether you think it sounds scriptural. If you want some, of course it would be, because it's based upon the Bible, which is written by a lot of bright guys who were searching God over a period of time, and it was proposed by a well-loved clergyman and adopted by A. It is what it is. The fact that you don't like it or do like it doesn't change the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't change the program or the formula as to how you stay sober, get in the fellowship of the Spirit, because Margaret gets upset when you say it. Because some alcoholic, because it hurts his feelings. Because considering how wacky and crazy we are, there's a lot of breaking of bones and spirit and humility and humiliating experiences that have to happen to you along the way for you to grow in the image and likeness of his creator. That's why they say the way we get a new perspective is by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, insulting. You know, that's how it happens. The way it is, by 100 forms of humiliation, the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. We get this thing by being crushed and remolded and brought up again in a different image. By the way, do you happen to remember how you got in here in the first place? Was it because you were having a good time at like an amusement park and somebody handed you $1 million and said, oh, I think I'll change and try AA and say the serenity prayer? Or were you crushed and almost forced to come in here? Well, let me tell you something. If you're pretty bright, that should give you an idea of what's about to happen for the next 30 years. Maybe not as bad as when it first happened to you, or maybe even worse. But the crushing will happen. You will meet people in here that you admire, that you like, or maybe that you don't like, and they'll say things to you that you'll say, well, that was pretty obnoxious. I don't like that guy. And they'll be the guys that, and gals that you got to hang out with. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, of tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I've made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. That's the story. He sold himself short. That's the way they did it between 1935 and 1939. That's an example of, that's an Al Kennedy. That's an example of somebody, he's not talking about not drinking. We're so far from the not drinking thing you can possibly imagine. The not drinking thing is what happens in the beginning. The not drinking thing is the ante in the poker game. The drinking thing is what you do, is what happens to you if you don't get to this deal. You know, the gravitational pull of this disease will bring you back. Or maybe even worse, you'll stay sober, but you'll live a horrible, miserable life. And you'll never quite know what it's like. You're feeling crappy about yourself and other people. This is the fellowship of the Spirit. This is the difference between living a life where the wrongdoings of others, real or imagined, fancy to real, imaginary stuff, you know what I mean? Stuff you just think up in your life that you're thinking about. You know, they're not thinking about you, but you're thinking about them. This is the difference between living a life where you're constantly thinking about, you know, where you can't stand silence, you got to have a radio on, you got to have a TV on, you got to have something to distract you from worldly clamors, because when you're alone by yourself with your thoughts, they're bad thoughts about other people and they make you uncomfortable all the time and you just feel crappy about yourself. So you got to do, you got to go, you got to smoke, you got to drink, you got to do something. You got to eat, you got to smoke, you got to talk, you got to text. You can't sit still because you feel so crappy. That's the difference between living that kind of a life and a life of inspirational thinking, which is what they talk about in the 11th step. And they talk about a different type of life in the 11th step. Did you know that? They talk about a different type of life. This is how they phrase it in the 11th step. They say it this way. They first talk about doing the 10th step, doing an inventory. And there's a reason for that, which I'm really maybe not going to go into right now. But there's a reason why you got to do an inventory, because in order to inventory, I told you that story last time. You know, I'm going to do it real fast. You know, when you are thinking about this world, when you are you can either focus on him. You know, the 11th step is about focusing on him. See that your relationship with him is right. Talking about him, focusing on him, who he is, what he's about, looking at him. It's not about looking at her. It's not about looking about the guy, the gal, the car, the money. You know, you start looking at that stuff, you're back into the world of death. You're back into the stuff you were doing before you came in here, the stuff that you're addicted to. You know, that's what it talks about in the 7th step. It says we don't want to deprecate material achievement, but no people have made a worse try of it. You know, our constant striving for what is it? Money, property, prestige, and romance. They lump it all in there. They throw all in there everything we want to watch, we want to grab, we want to talk about, you know, that we want to be. All about the money, property, prestige, and romance. He says, we got to get rid of that stuff. It's all about character building and coming closer to God. You know, and that's where alcoholics say, man, I don't know whether, I got a choice I got to make. Do I want to turn my life over to him utterly, which is what the book says? Do I want to throw it all over? And this thing, and I'm going to tell you something, this choice doesn't necessarily happen like that. Sometimes it happens one day at a time for 25, 30, 40 years. And one day you just throw a little bit more in each day, a little bit more in each week. And maybe that's sometimes, but here's what it says, because I'll tell you this, when I'm thinking about people, places, things, and I'm worried, you know, that thing I described to you last week, if you were there when I told off the cashier in front of my son, you know, well, I'm a commercial guy, I'm a guy, you get the 10th step, you'll hear the story. And I got upset with her, and then I drove away, and then I had to come, and all I could do was, you know, when I have a fight with somebody, when I get into a hassle with somebody, I don't know about you, but I'm the kind of alcoholic, I can't stop thinking about it. I can't stop thinking about it. You know, even if time goes by and I somehow can stop thinking about it, it's down in there somewhere. It'll spring up 6 months later when I tell myself I don't deserve to live, or I'm a piece. It's there. It'll come out another way, you know. And I can't think about God. I can only think about that person. I can only think about what that person's thinking about me. I can only think about how I am. I can't do that. I got to go up to that person, back to my person, and say, listen, I was wrong. What I did was wrong. I'm sorry. I got to apologize. I got to clear away that crap in order to even have a shot at God. You know, and God knows that. That's why it says in Sermon on the Mount, it says, if you want to communicate with me, if you really want a relationship with me, and you got some sort of problem with your brother, you fix that up first. And then you come to me. Don't come to me with your brother on your mind. Come to me with a clear conscience. It says right here, it says, in thinking about our day, this is the 11th step. I want you to listen to these words. You know, if you don't experience this, you'll think it, you won't even understand what they're talking about, which is okay. There's a lot of stuff in this book. You know, there's two ways of reading this. You can sort of read this for the words and try to think of what they're saying and not understand what they're saying. And then you can start reading this book after it's happened to you. After you've experienced the deal, and you can say, wow, that's what happened to me. And that's a different type of reading. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. There are some people in this room that live a confused life. They're confused about themselves. They're confused about their life. They're confused about what's going to happen to them, what's happened to them, what's going to happen to them. They're just confused. Here we ask God for inspiration, intuitive thought of decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We often support. That's easy to tell an alcoholic. Just relax. I'm going to die, you know. Just relax. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried for a while. Now listen to this. Listen to this. This is out of our book. I'm not making this stuff up. And I'm going to tell you something else. This stuff is the truth. They're telling you the truth. They're not writing about something that didn't happen to them. Ask Al Kennedy. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, now listen to what they say, nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. What do you think they mean by that? On the plane of inspiration. Our thinking becomes more and more on the plane. What do you think it is to think on the plane of inspiration? We come to rely upon it. Let me talk to you about the plane of inspiration. Let me tell you about life on the plane of inspiration. Let me tell you something. You need to listen to this because this concerns you and the rest of your life. When you first come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and it happens to almost everybody, you actually experience, like they say in the book, here and there, life on the plane of inspiration. You'll actually listen to it at meetings. You'll hear people talk about it. Let me tell you what it sounds like. This may have happened to you. You'll be doing what alcoholics do, sort of living your life, you know, by your wits, trying to figure out how to manage your life, even though the book says we can't manage our own lives, but constantly on top, trying to manage, trying to control this person, trying to control that person, watching what he's doing, watching what she's doing, you know, checking your calendar, checking your bank account, living your life, managing your life and everything, even though it says we don't manage our lives, we can't manage it. You'll be doing it. You'll be doing the deal, yet staying sober and going to meetings, stark raving sober. You'll be doing that deal. It's okay. That's okay. That's the way we start out because, listen, our alcoholic life is the only normal one. You can't turn this around like on a dime. This is the way we're used to thinking. We don't know of any other way of thinking. Every once in a while, we run into an Al Kennedy. He's not thinking like we're thinking. We're saying, how do you do that deal? You know it's out there. You just don't know how to do it. He becomes part of your we. If you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get, you're willing to go to, so you follow him around. You figure out, maybe if I go to coffee with him, it'll sort of slough off on me or something. I'll wake up one day, I'll be like him. I don't know how to do it, but you just start, how does he think? What does he think about this thing? You just have to put yourself in the position to be with them. So in any event, every once in a while you're quote, sober, collecting your first year, your second year, your third year medallion, and in between that time thinking about killing yourself and stuff like that, you know, but in a good way, you know? It's kind of hard to understand. You got to be there to understand what I'm talking about. I mean, you feel really good. It's just every once in a while you want to blow your brains out. It's not a big deal, you know what I mean? It's part of the disease, okay? Don't let it bother you, okay? You never do it, you know? You just think about it, you know? Because life is just too flippin' tough. So, in any event, so then every once in a while, you're put in a situation, you know, this happens with girls and their mothers a lot. Girls and their mothers. There's something about girls and their mothers, you know. I got three daughters or guys with their job boss or something like that where they're in a situation and the mom or the daughter or somebody says something. And they come into me and this is what they say. You know, I'm using this as an example because I just heard this. He says, you know, I can't believe it. My mother the other day, I was with her and, you know, she's always been critical of me and everything, and, you know, and she said this. And instead of, and I'm telling you, when she does this, it drives me crazy. And I usually beat her and scream and yell and blah, 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 and this happened. And I just turned to her and I said, Mother, thank you. I did this. I said this, whatever. And then they say, and she smiled at me. She says, well, thank you. And walked away. And this is what the gal will say. The gal says, and that's not me. That's what they'll say. They'll say, you ever hear anybody who says, and it's not, that's not, they'll say, they're like in shock. It was them, they were there, they did it, they reacted, and they'll say, but that's not me. And then they'll add something on to it. He says, I don't even know where that came from. You ever hear anybody who means says, I said, and I don't even know where that came from. It was like there was no thought involved. But it was, you ready for this? It was the perfect thing. It was inspired thought. It didn't come from you. It came from him. You know, when I do an AA talk, I don't prepare. Because I don't want it to come from me. You understand? You don't want it to come from you. Because you'll try to figure out, what can I say to make them happy? What do I say to say? You've got motives and crap going on there that's just going to screw the whole thing up, okay? When you're talking to people, it's all about manipulation and getting them to like you and later on. There's so much that think that you want to be in control, and they all recognize it and they don't want you in control, and it's just going to screw the whole thing up. You just got to let go and let God. You know, and what happens is early on, people start experiencing this stuff of inspirational thinking. That's what they're talking about. When you live life and all of a sudden perfect things are happening, and every time something perfect happens, you're not involved. You just happen to be there and it's coming out of your mouth. And you are so shocked, you can't wait to report it to a group what happened. You know what it says? It says, as time goes on, we live more and more on this. It becomes a working part of the mind. We become to rely upon it. So I want you to imagine a life where you're walking through life where it doesn't happen once in a while. It happens, I don't know, once a day. Once a day that happens to you, okay? Has anybody ever had something like that happen to you where you say something, you do something, you don't even know where it came from, it was like perfect? Ever happened to you? Okay. Well, imagine if that happened to you once a day. That'd be pretty cool, right? How about once an hour? How about all the time? What would your life be like if that's the way you lived all the time? Where there was no thinking involved, no people in your brain, no worry, no anxiety, just inspirational, just talking, doing, and acting inspirationally on the inspirational plane. That's what the 11th step is all about. That's what seeking him is all about. That's, you know why that happens? That happens because you're thinking inspired thought, because God's doing for you what you can't do for yourself because of your relationship with him. Because if you're, you know, listen to me, I have a sponsor. He's got 57 years of sobriety. He's a Baptist preacher. He introduced me to another guy who's got 85 years old. He's a Baptist preacher. I hang out with both those guys. They're like in their 80s, their mid-80s. I have coffee with them. I talk to them. I was with them last night. You know what happens? When I start hanging out with these guys, I start, over a period of time, thinking like these guys. I start talking like these guys. I start turning into these guys because these are the people I'm hanging out with. So these are the people I'm thinking like, I'm talking like. I think of life the way these guys think about life. I tend to, you know, talk to people the way these guys tend to talk to people. You know, without even knowing it, I'm sort of looking at them in my role. And I'm not saying they're the only ones. I start reading the books they're reading. I start looking at life the way they look at life. You know, this has an effect. And of course, these guys, the guys I choose to hang around, what do you think they're focused on? You got a clue? You know, what do you think they're talking about all the time? They're talking about what the 11th step says to talk about all the time. I don't talk about guys that are talking about, you know, I don't talk about guys that their entire life is focused on the heat, or their entire life is focused on sex, or their entire life is focused. Those are the guys I used to hang out with. I'm not saying you can't watch the heat game and can't do anything like that, but what is your main focus? What's your main focus? If you look at the 11th step, our main focus of our life and all through this book is once we get there, our whole focus is to be close to him so we can perform his work well and he will give us everything we need, including inspirational thought. So here's the deal. what you really need to want to ask yourself is what kind of life you want to live. Do you want to live the life you're currently living now? Are you really satisfied with the way you're living like now? Or do you want to live the Al Kennedy life? Do you want to live the inspirational thought life? Do you want that kind of life? Now, the interesting thing is, and this is just an AA truth, there are some people that don't want that life. They just don't want it. You know, thanks a lot, Russ. I appreciate it, but I think you're kind of crazy, quite frankly. You know, I'm going after the women. I'm going after the cars. You know, I don't know about this stuff, but I came in here not to stop drinking and just go to meetings. I'm going to do my thing. This is your theology. This is your thought. Thank you very much. Adios. And there are some people that want this more than anything else. And, you know, we all meet in the same room at the same time. And we have just different views of life and what this book is all about. It's just, that's just the way it is. And if you're going to try to live this life and get this stuff, you're going to have your detractors. You're going to have people that don't like you. Because, you know, people don't like people talking about stuff, about doing stuff and living life that they don't want to live because they feel that a little convicted or a little guilty that they're not doing it. They don't want to hear that stuff. You know what I mean? They want to just sort of like be dilettantes and do AA life, which is okay. There's no problem. Because this is each one of our lives. I'm not telling you have to do this. You know, it's none of my business. I'm just called up here to give my message, you know, try to carry the message. The only message I have is the message of my own life, the message of this book, the way I see it, and what's happened to me. You're free to reject it or say I don't like it, or you're free to, you know, come along or hop on board, whatever it is. That's okay. That's what we're here for. You get to follow whoever you want to follow, talk about whatever you want to talk about. But listen, this ain't a dress rehearsal. This is it. You don't want to really get to the end. Man, I'll tell you, I was talking to a guy yesterday who was with somebody who was dying. I don't know how many people have ever been with people who are dying who are not believers. I don't know how many people are here who's ever actually been with somebody who's dying who don't have a relationship with God. She says, I've never seen anybody with more fear in their eyes. This person was 80 years old. They were so scared. I never want to be anything like that. And I've been with believers who are dying, you know, and I've seen that deal. There's a real distinction. There's a real difference. You don't want to start working on the third step and the 11th step on your deathbed. You know, you don't want to start trying to figure out how what this thing is all about when it gets to that deal. It's a scare. It's a fear, not knowing where you're going and where you're going to be and what's going to happen. It's a fear you don't want to deal with, you know, if you got any brains in your head. So in any event, thank you very much. It's great being here. Next week, 12 steps.